Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm here. I am here today, folks. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. The hashtag is big time. Potentially big tired, but definitely big time. We are here to bask in the glory of Nikias Duncan. Man, dropped, how many columns you dropped? 4 columns on basketballnews.com? Did the Real GM podcast with Danny LaRue? Did the Void with KOC? This man hi-hello'd us to death this week.
All right.
Live from his suite in Miami.
Okay. Now we're really gassing it now. I see
art in the background.
Okay.
How many tables you got to live?
What do you don't do this?
No, sorry. Okay, that apple juice only. My bad. I am ready to go, and we got the all star team out. Ooh, come on, man.
Goodness. Well,
this is my favorite part of the pod, by the way, is just disrupting the energy by praising Nikias and then making fun of him.
Yeah, my favorite part too. Let's go with that. It's a mutual feeling here. Glad to have you here. This has been a very busy week. 2 articles and I collabed on another one. A lot of podcasts this week. I am in Miami right now. I'm going to be at Heat Clippers and also Heat Raptors. So that's going to be an adventure. What else? Actually, I think that's it. It's a fun week right now.
It's cool. Getting a cup of coffee, yeah.
That's a good shot. Shout out to Amir Coffee, who continues to play well.
I was trying to plug your piece.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You can check out my words on Amir Coffee at basketballnews.com if you have not already. But I landed in Miami to the All-Star team news. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Steve is amped. I am not.
Let's preach the gospel. I heard the energy. I want it. I want it here. I want it here at the Dunker Spot. I'm not sitting under the rim. I am flashing today. I am posting up. Deep seal. Arms are up. Throw me the ball in the middle of the paint, please.
You are
2005 Kevin Love. Give me the rock.
I see. I was about to say you're going Ayoka Lee on this podcast today.
Also that. But there without the footwork, no counters.
Without the, oh no. Okay. Let's start with the West. I think that's where the real fun begins. Shout out to Ja Morant, all-star starter. Steph Curry's also in there. Jokic is in there. LeBron is in there. And we have Andrew Wiggins.
I tried to prepare you, man.
You did.
I tried to prep you for this moment, but it came. Once Andrew Wiggins got that number 3 in the fan vote, I knew it was a wrap, but continue.
I would like to say that Andrew Wiggins has objectively had a very good season on both ends of the floor. He has been an instrumental part of what Golden State has done in the first half of this season. Been good defensively. He shot well from 3. He's finished well. The shot diet is a little bit better. The decisions with the ball have been made a little bit quicker. He seems more comfortable. The locker room loves him.
Boy, you're starting with a lot of love. Are you turning the corner and pick and roll? Let's go.
I would just like to also say that those things can all be true without Andrew Wiggins being all-star starter good. I can't say that I agree with what the voting showed in regards to this front court. Go ahead. You are buzzing.
Hey, remember we had the pod and I told you AC Green, BJ Armstrong, Dan Majerle, these things happen. It happened.
Yes. And that does not make it right.
The fans wanted it. And the media low-key tricked it off.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Because here's the thing. LeBron and Jokic were going to dominate. Everyone knew that. They were going to be in. But once Andrew Wiggins got the fan vote, it became a split game. So if all he needed was enough player votes to have a shot. And if you recall, once I found out he actually was ahead of Draymond last year because of this system, he got enough player votes to keep him high enough. And then the media dove into Rudy Gobert and gave him 65 and only gave Draymond 20. And that was a wrap. That's all Andrew Wiggins needed. And now we got Andrew Wiggins all-star starter. Fire up the video game. They show the roster still on the screen, right? He's going to be right there.
Oh, brother. It's going to be cool seeing that on 2K, where it's just like, you know, Steph's a 95. LeBron's going to be like a 96. Jokic is going to be like a 96. Ja's going to be like a 92. And he's going to be like 82 Andrew Wiggins. Yeah, I hope everyone feels bad. Not everyone, because again, like, yo, shout out to Wiggins. But
this generation needed this moment.
They need this moment?
They needed this moment, man. Gotta let the fans cook, man. Go ahead. I'm gonna let you get your Wiggins off, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Like, Wiggins is just a shining example, but this is also just something that I've been yelling about for literal years at this point. It goes back to the other part we did, where I'm just like, okay, make it matter or make it fun. Because if we're in this gray area, then I am absolutely going to nitpick Andrew Wiggins being an all-star game starter. Where this is, again, like, he's been good this year. It's not like they picked a bad player to make the team. It's less about Wiggins and more about Draymond's been better than him this year. Like, it's just a host of front. Rudy Gobert's been better than him this year. It's just a host of front court players, I feel like, that have been better, had better seasons than Andrew Wiggins. And that's kind of where it goes for me.
But these guys you name are still going to be, they're still going to be all-stars.
Well, and then someone else.
Oh, yeah. Like I told you, one of your guys is getting squeezed.
Yeah. Yeah, probably so. So I'm just a little bit annoyed. Just a little bit annoyed by the process.
But this process isn't new, though. Like, the fans have made these things before. They've done this before. Antoine Walker got voted in as an all-star. All due respect. Like, Thunder Dan. AC Green in that era. Come on.
Correct. That's a problem. All due respect.
It's for the fans, man. And Golden State showed up and showed out for their guy. Kind of a weird heel turn on Draymond in a sense, but hey, power of the people. Gotta let him cook, man.
No, we don't. Because this happens.
All right, you just want to see what LeBron, Jokic, it would just be Steph, Ja, and Luka. That's more fun.
I mean, Luka's better at very least.
How are you, young star on the rise, going to just wipe away this Andrew Wiggins getting voted in and having this all-star experience?
Because people have been better than him. Like, that's the whole thing. It's nothing with Andrew Wiggins personally.
But
it's a cool moment for him. It's a cool moment for the team. It's a cool moment for his fans, Golden State fans, Canadians. Like, it's cool. However, he hasn't been the third best front court player in the West.
No, but he got the third most fan votes, and that got him in.
Correct, which is my problem.
If Paul George is healthy, he probably slides in. If Rudy Gobert and Draymond don't split, Draymond probably is in. But those things happen, and Andrew Wiggins is in.
The fact that there's even a split portion with those two is also part of the problem.
Well, there wouldn't be a split if there was positionless.
That's also the problem.
No, I mean, they wouldn't have an opportunity to split votes. LeBron and Jokic would still get the same amount. Curry would still get the same amount. So now you have two spots for Ja, Rudy, Draymond. You run into the same issue. It's just there's no organization.
There's also no Wiggins in that case. Look, man, I just want I just want these teams to be better. That's all.
The hashtag is Big Ballot. Let's get Nikias a vote.
Give me a vote.
Let's please give me a vote. Let's start the movement there. I thought you had one when I looked at the results. Brandon Ingram did get one media vote. I thought that was you.
noted basketball player that is better than Andrew Wiggins, Brandon Ingram. But no, like, I don't know. What else stood out to you among the Western Conference votes?
There were some player voting type deals. I know everyone likes to just screenshot and laugh at the players and then post the names. I can't believe so-and-so got a vote. How about Rudy Gobert getting that amount of votes and technically being fourth from the players? That kind of goes against the narrative a little bit. Thought you might appreciate that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anthony Davis and Dame kind of not getting the same amount of love was interesting.
Different.
That was interesting. What else do I have out west? DeJounte Murray. This is the funny part, because I feel like you make fun of the players and their votes, or no?
For the most part, I have not liked the player votes at large.
They had your back with DeJounte Murray. Sixth with the players. Fifth with the media. So, hey, that leap's being respected. Devin Booker. Players had him. Desmond Main almost got enough more player votes than Donovan Mitchell.
Which is hilarious to me.
Anthony Edwards did get more player votes than Donovan Mitchell. Someone needs to do a doc on, like, the hating that goes on with these votes.
Yeah, like, there are some cliques in the NBA. We can say that.
Yeah, but there shouldn't be a world where more players vote for Josh Giddey than Mike Conley. I want to fight y'all.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Aiding to your OKC hate, I see.
Josh Giddey.
There we go. Folks, we've done it. Well, I tweeted out the screenshot of Jake Fisher's Bleacher Report article this morning where he reported that the Thunder are looking for a first-round pick for Kenrich Williams. And I think you sent, 9 angry emojis, if I had that right?
It was 3 smiley faces, a hashtag shock, because the Oklahoma City would ask for a first-round pick for you.
Rightfully so.
Oh, look, this guy. I've been saying the hashtag is big time and no one listens to me.
Oh, brother.
You want to go out east? I don't want to keep you too long on this. Let's preach the gospel. Let me hear this DeRozan. Let me hear this DeRozan energy.
Props to DeMar DeRozan for making the team first and foremost. Also, I still contend like him getting a backcourt slot is not what should have happened.
But him getting a backcourt spot allowed him to get ones across the board. Fan love, media love, player love. That's dope. Did you ever think DeMar DeRozan would be voted into the All-Star game ever again?
No, I didn't see that.
And here
ever again sounds so stark. You know,
we can be honest. You didn't think DeMar would be the number one guard or the number one All-Star vote. And he was. I think that's cool. I know
it is objectively cool.
I know it's going to upset you because either Fred or Darius probably gonna get squeezed out, but it's a dope moment for DeMar. Recognition. I'm all for it. And plus, that Eastern Conference front court was unanimous across the board. All 98 media folks said, yep, those 3. So we wouldn't have that moment.
I guess. Like, it's less about DeMar, because again, he's been good enough to be a starter either way. So like, it's not about that. My whole thing is like, hey, we have positions. So if we're going to have positions, let's make sure that they are dubbed the right way. And I just don't think DeMar is a backcourt player based on the role he plays in Chicago. That's been my whole thing. It is a good moment for him. Like, he's been dope this year. If you are listening to him as a guard, like, he's very obviously deserving of getting the starting spot, and he did. So I don't have any quibbles about that. It's just the principle of the matter for me.
The principle of the matter.
Yeah.
I'm mad Joe Johnson didn't get a vote.
Would you have given him the vote?
No.
Okay.
Love Joe, though.
Okay. Just want to check with that. But yeah, like, that's also going to be the annoying part. Like, we probably are going to see a good young guard get squeezed out. And also the front court the front court room this year is just bad. Not bad, like bad relative to all-star standard. I should put it that way. Like, it's not actually bad.
Well, here's the interesting point. I'm glad you brought up the front court. So KD is likely out, correct? So Jason Tatum will be sliding into the starting lineup. How do you feel about that, by the way?
I'm glad he's starting to play better, or I'm glad he's starting to shoot better as of late. That helps. Very timely rebound on the shot, I would say. He's been cooking.
Now, here's the question. This probably opens up Jared Allen to get in pretty easy. Does this allow the Miami Heat to sneak one or two folks in?
I would say definitely not two. Like, I just kind of wonder, like, how much the voters are going to value games played. Because, like, I know how I've been. I'm just like, hey, 60% of games, whatever. If they're not as tight on that as I am, which I would imagine they're not, like, Jimmy Butler's going to get in because he's just been phenomenal this season when he's been able to play. So I think that does open up a spot for him if no one else on the Miami squad.
All right. I was just curious there because number one seed, maybe Bam gets some love if he goes off here late. How'd you feel about Miles Bridges getting some love, though? He was fourth in the player vote.
Miles Bridges is a cool dude. And I don't mean that like pejoratively, like he's objectively like a cool dude. So like I could see why players rock with him. And he's also been very good. He's, you know, we had the midseason awards pod. Like I had him as my most improved player. Like he's objectively good. All-star is probably a bridge too far for me. So I wouldn't have had him four. Because if you have him four in the front court, like he's ahead of some guys that are also really good at basketball. Some may say are better at basketball than him. So can't say I agree, but like I get him being popular among the players.
Man, I thought you would be aligned with that. Him and Jared Allen got more than Jason Tatum, which seems like the theme of this pod this year.
Yep. I mean, I think Jared Allen's had a better year than Jason Tatum. I don't know if Miles Bridges has. Because while Tatum's been underwhelming to his standard, it's also to his standard. And like Miles Bridges is not defended the same way that Jason Tatum is. I think that's a very fair thing to say.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, hey, usually they don't make a leap. So I'm trying to give the players a little bit of credit when they do what they're supposed to do. More upsetting, erasure, Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday?
Probably Drew. Like Drew's been better. I hope this doesn't mean Drew ends up missing out on the spot. Like, we're going to see what the coaches do next week, but it's kind of, I don't know. Like, I feel like more players would rock with Drew than they do.
Nobody likes defenders.
But like, that.
But no, I think that's a split in deal. I thought you were going to go Middleton for sure.
No, like, I love Chris. Like, he's been Milwaukee's third best buck this year.
So I'm going to see if you keep this same energy after I go into this statistic I found, right? So Chris Middleton was 14th by the fans. He received no media votes, obviously, because they all went to those three. He received two player votes. So here are the list of players that got more votes from players than Chris Middleton. Are you ready?
No, but continue.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
You can stop right there.
Gordon Hayward. John Collins. Julius Randle, Evan Mobley, Domantas Sabonis, Kyle Kuzma, OG Anunoby, Nick Claxton, John Collins, Scottie Barnes, Miles Turner, Kevin Love, PJ Washington, Goga Batadze, Wendell Carter Jr., Denny Avila, and Andre Drummond.
Disgusting behavior.
But I will give you the list of the names of the folks that he tied with, just to make things a little bit more even. Just some of the names that he tied with. Kelly Oubre Jr., he did tie him with two. George Niang did tie him as well. Mo Bamba tied him. Sadiq Bey, Davis Bertanis, Patrick Williams, Mitchell Robinson, all tied there. Udonis Haslam, received the same amount of player all-star votes as Chris Middleton, Mason Plumlee, Chris Boucher, and Dwayne Dedman, just to give you a taste there.
Did you feel good about that? Was that worth it for you? Was that entertaining?
It was worth it, except I fumbled the Udonis Haslam because I noticed that just right now. That should have been the ending. But yeah, I feel good about that.
Disgusting behavior is what that is. I just, so much disrespect for a champion, an all-star, a family man. Like, you know, it's just odd. It's odd to me. I don't get why people don't. I don't get why people dislike Chris Middleton. I will say that much.
I'm trying to think of an answer. And it's weird because he has a very Hooper game.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what do you even dislike?
Has Redacted talked about him? Give me 1 second.
Oh, no. I don't like where this is going at all. But I don't know. Like, this is why I always get annoyed when I go deep in the weeds on, like, what the player votes look like and what the fan votes look like. Going back to the Rudy Gobert part, it's very odd to see, like, he ranked pretty decently with the players, ranked pretty decently with the media, and then it's, like, 700,000 fan votes. It's like, what are y'all even watching? What basketball are you consuming? This is very condescending. But, like, what's happening where Rudy Gobert isn't even close?
I mean, I would guess, I don't know, Paul George, Draymond, I don't know. Cat got a lot more votes than him. I can't answer that one for you.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
All right. I've had enough fun with the All-Star game.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like
define fun. God. How do you feel about the new Rising Stars format?
It was a lot. What's that meme? I think someone retweeted it. Where it's like, I'm not reading all that.
You know what? Fair enough.
Someone did that and that was funny. So shout out. I wish I could remember. I like it a little bit better now that I know the way it's split. Because at first when they said it, it was like, yo, rookie sophomores and Ignite. And I was like, that could get messy. If the Ignite players come really ready to hoop and the other guys come for an exhibition, could get ugly. Yeah, and it could get ugly for the Ignite if the other guys wake up. But it's, what, 4 7-player teams, 1 Ignite player per team. It's still fun times. But I think it's a cool way to integrate the Ignite guys, get them some shine. Obviously, the Team World versus Team USA concept immediately crashed after last year.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it was not a vibe. So let's try something new. And plus, anything with the target points is going to get a thumbs up from me. So I'm a little more intrigued than I was. It still feels like a lot. I don't know about the in-between challenge type deal, but I'm with it.
That was the confusing part for me. Not necessarily confusing, but it just kind of gets to the point where it's like, okay, are we doing too much for this particular game? Because
they got to fill the hours, man. TV time.
Maybe they should have a... Never mind. That's a bad joke. But no, sure, I guess. Like, it's cool. I want to see how it works. I think it's kind of where I lay it. I do like the target score portion of it. I just hope it isn't like drawn out. That's kind of my thing.
I thought you would be excited by it.
Yeah, I'm like at a 6 out of 10, I think, on this. I just need to see it. Like, I'll probably feel better after the actual night.
Now, I guess my only issue with it on paper is I get the target scores, but it's also an exhibition type deal. So at what point does this turn the corner and like go from fun to serious? That's what I'm intrigued with.
Because like the first one's to like 50, right?
Yeah. So there's enough time to get them up, but also, what if like some team comes out, hits for like 5 threes in a row? I don't know. That part concerns me a little bit, but yeah, it should. It will probably end up being captivating, and people will enjoy watching it. That'd be my best guess.
I think more than anything, like this is going to be like, even if the idea itself is kind of convoluted and stuff, like the player pool, if everyone's healthy, is going to be really good. And I think that excites me the most out of all of this. Like, we have a really good core of rookies and sophomores.
And so that could make it fun, as you're right. I'm interested to hear who you have as your picks.
Oh, man. Okay, so here are the 12 rookies that I would like to see. I know we're going to agree on at least half of them. And once we get towards the bottom of our list, it's probably going to be weird. But like I have Cade and Mobley, Scotty, Wagner. I think we're all good there. We're going to have, got to have Giddy in there. I have Jalen Suggs in. So I don't know if that's a hot take or not. Chris Duarte is in for me. Herb Jones is definitely in there for me. I have Davion Mitchell in there. Ayo Dosunmu in there. My last two would be Şengün and Austin Reeves.
Now, here's the interesting part. I had Şengün and Austin Reeves and Kessler Edwards on my team at one point.
Oh, at one point. Okay.
Şengün made it because you need a big man at some point. Mm-hmm. Was my assumption. And so I gave each team one big. But I tried to go kind of exhibitionist, who would be fun. So I had Mobley, Barnes, Cade, Franz, Giddy, of course. Herb Jones, Jalen Green, Ayo, Duarte, Davion, Şengün, and Jalen Suggs.
Okay. I thought we were going to be like, I don't know. I didn't expect our team rosters to be that close.
What did we miss? Did we have the same one?
I think we just about had it. Who's the guy that you didn't have? Like, did you? I don't think you had Duarte, did you?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Oh, wow, this is the first in
Dunkershot history. Oh, we might have the same one.
The final episode of the Dunkershot.
There we go. Who are your sophomores?
Anthony Edwards, LaMelo, Halliburton, Desmond Main, Tyrese Maxey, Emmanuel Quickley, Cole Anthony, Isaac Okoro, Denny, Obi Toppin because it's an exhibition. I'm trying to do quick math here real quick. Sadiq Trey and Okongwu.
Okay. We finally got some differing lists. All right. I too have LaMelo. I also have Edwards. Have Cole Anthony, Tyrese Halliburton. They have Desmond Bane, Tyrese Maxey, Sadiq Bey, Jayshon Tate. Have Okongwu, Devin Vassell. I cannot believe you didn't have Devin Vassell on the roster. What is the face for?
I regret not having Jayshon Great on there, but Vassell.
What's the beef with Vassell?
No beef.
Well, there went San Antonio. That's kind of tough.
No, I'm saying, oh, go ahead. Keep going.
Unbelievable. But anyway, have Vassell, also have Denny. And I also wanted another big aside from Onyeka, so I went Xavier Tillman.
So you did not go Obi Toppin?
I did not go Obi Toppin. Did not go Isaiah Stewart. Did not go Precious Achiuwa. I feel like this would kind of be the format for him, honestly. Just a bunch of dunks and running up and not having to, like, think.
There's no way Obi is going to go from the slam dunk contest to not being in this game.
Probably not. I can't wait to yell about it. That's fine.
You can yell about that, too? Goodness gracious. Are you gonna yell about this stuff until you get a ballot and then you become criticized for these moments?
I'll put it like this. If or when I'm blessed enough to have a ballot, I am fine with people quibbling about my picks. Because, like, I know I'm going to do the work to make a solid ballot.
Talk to him. Go ahead. Let him know.
So, like, if you disagree, like, I want to hear why you disagree, and we can have some respectful conversation. I don't think I'm going to have anything egregious on my ballot if I ever get one. That's kind of where I'm at.
I don't know. You kind of had Luka not on your all-star ballot like 2 weeks ago.
I even said that he's probably going to make it on. Don't do this. People can listen to that podcast. It's fine. This man trying to set me up. That's crazy. That is crazy. It really be your own co-host. That's wild. Wild to me.
Hey, sometimes when the offense has it moving, you got to get physical. You got to put your arm right there. You can't let them cut off freely.
Got to put you in the bonus. It's fine. It's a bad shot. Anyway, let's. I think I'm good on all-star stuff. Did you have anything else?
Nope, let's keep going, man.
All right, let's roll into the mailbag. Let's engage our dunkers to head into the weekend. First question, I think you will enjoy this one, Steve. This one comes from Matt, who asked, the Grizzlies are essentially getting good offense right now because they generate so many extra possessions and are finishing in transition. Looking to the playoffs, do you think they can sustain that? What are some ways they can generate better half-court looks?
I do think they can sustain it, because a lot of those extra possessions are because of the efforts defensively. And we've talked about the efforts they make as far as pressuring the ball and help defense, as far as helping at the nail, recovering, rotating if the ball drives, helping each other in that way, making sure they can test bodies in the paint, deflections. So those kind of things I think can translate. My biggest issue with Memphis is the fourth quarter adventures, where the half court, everything just stops. And it becomes job pick and roll. Now, it worked against San Antonio recently because he launched himself and got fouls, and he's also really good. But I think for them to continue to generate those half-court looks, it's all up to their tempo. It's all up to their pace. It's all up to their flow. You can always mix in jaw and pick and roll. But I think that they're most dangerous when you're not sure, is it Desmond Mane coming off screens? Is it Jaren Jackson coming off screens? Is it going to be a pick and roll? It's going to be a dribble handoff. Are they using their spacing, misdirection? When they have that mix going and you throw in what Ja does and you have the transition game, they become very tough. But they kind of have this weird dynamic of getting really good fourth quarter reps this season, but I'm not sure how confident you feel if it's a playoff setting, because the intensity will be up from the defense. So they're ready. I don't think anyone would say they can't go toe-to-toe in fourth quarters, but they also feel like sometimes they can get in their own way. So for me, it's always been get that tempo back up.
Okay. Well, this is boring, because that was going to be my note. Like, I think they could just get into their stuff a little bit. I thought they could just get into their stuff a little bit quicker in the half court, because, like, it's that, and, like, if there's a worry I have for this Memphis team overall, like, I think it's the shooting aside from Desmond Bane. And, like, what that does for their overall space. I think we all know Jaren can shoot, but, like, also it's been a down year for him this year. And so if he's not hitting at a high clip, or if teams aren't, like, running him off, then I am worried about the combination of the floor shrinking a bit and also Memphis not getting their stuff quick enough or running into their sets hard enough. And it just makes it easier to kind of sink into the paint. And, like, Ja's superhuman, but also that's a tough diet to live on in the postseason. So, like, if they can find a way, I think the low-hanging fruit is just to play a little bit faster in the half court, make it a little bit easier for the Ja to turn the corner, stress the defense earlier in the clock, open up some more cracks, because they have the bank and play secondary. They can make plays against a mid defense. Jaren can make plays against a mid defense. If you're tossing it into Steven Adams, like, he can make passes for you. Like, they have options in the half court. It's just making sure that those options are also optimal, if that makes sense.
No, I hear you. I'm going to ask a question just to build off that. Do you have any concerns about what it looks like if teams ramp up the pressure on Ja in pick and roll?
I think it depends on, like, who his screener is, if that makes sense. Like, I probably trust Steven Adams to make quicker decisions in short roll than Jaren right now. I think that's an area of growth for Jaren. Like obviously the scoring chops, like he does have the touch to get into a floater if he needs to. He can get to the rim. Finishing's been a little up and down this year, but I think if he pops in that area, then it becomes a little bit untenable to pressure Ja. I think Steven Adams is already a good enough passer that if he can float around that free throw area, he could pick out a shooter or a cutter. With Jaren, it's a little bit more hit or miss, but if he gets that, then it's kind of like, what do you do?
No, I hear you. I think that's fair. And having both those guys being able to screen and give you different looks is a definite positive. I think it's less of a concern for me and more just like a question mark. Because there's been times when teams have ramped up the pressure on Ja and the reads haven't quite been there and he hasn't been able to turn the corner. And I don't think it's that he can't do it. I wonder how those reps and what they look like.
I got you.
And does that bog down the Memphis offense? You know, does he try and skip pass and it's not there? Those kind of little things. I don't even know if we'll see it, but that's something I'm throwing out there.
I got you. We have a pair of Philadelphia questions. We'll start with this one from Philly Freezer. Said, just wanted a more broad evaluation of the Sixers from your point of view compared to this year's East. Embiid is playing at an MVP level, but typically struggles in the playoffs comparatively. Do you think he'll take another step in that regard with his play so far? And for the team as a whole, do you see them closer to the Bulls, Heat, Bucks tier or closer to the Celtics, Hornets, Cavs tier?
Appreciate the question. The Celtics, Hornets, Cavs tier. Two of those teams are not, one of those teams is not in that tier.
I see.
To me, we should have done a tier episode.
All-Star break is approaching. We can probably do that heading into the second half of the season, or the second portion of the season.
Jot down when the juice isn't flowing. I'd probably say the Sixers are closer to, the upper tier. Mainly because they have more. No.
It's a good question,
no.
Huh?
No, that's a good question. It's disrespectful, but I'm gonna put them closer to that Hornets Celtics tier. Just because of that would land them in a group of teams that have strengths but also have weaknesses. Even though Philly's playing really well right now. That's a really good question. Where do you have them at?
Like, I feel like I'm asking two separate questions when it comes to Philly, which I think is the heart of this, where it's just like Joel Embiid is playing as well, if not better than anyone in the East since like mid-December. Joel Embiid is in the Giannis tier, in the healthy KD tier. But that's separate from, are the Sixers as good as the Bucks? Are the Sixers as good as the Nets? Are the Sixers as good as the Heat? Like, I don't think the Sixers are as good as those teams. Like, I think looking top to bottom, I think Philadelphia is, they're closer to Cleveland than they are to Miami, if that makes sense. And like, I'm not sure how that changes without a move or without a change of heart from Ben Simmons or redacted, I guess, whichever one we're going with on this pod.
No, that's fine. We can say his name every now and then. It's going to come up a lot here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Well, it's a weird team to evaluate because you could make the argument they're more regular season based. Embiid playing at this level. You have a defense that can show up. So you can bring that to the table and find a way to win a lot of games. When it converts to the playoffs and now teams are game planning against Embiid, it opens up a whole other level of questions. Do you have the lineups to space the floor? Do you have the shooters to knock down the shots? Because those doubles are coming. And how do you handle those? Embiid's improved there, but now they have to gear up. And also, you need your defense to show up in a high fashion with the type of play you have, with the type of roster you have right now. They needed that last year too, but you really need it this year. So if you run into a scenario like last year where Tobias Harris all of a sudden doesn't have a pick and roll coverage, and now you're trying to figure out which way you want Embiid to cover pick and rolls, you don't have the margin for error. So that for me is where I'm like, they're good, but I don't know where their ceiling is.
You are very good at this podcasting thing. This leads into the other Philly question that we got from Ronnie, who says, you guys talk a lot about the importance of scheme versatility on defense. And as a Sixer fan, that's something that's been lacking for more or less the whole time Joel has been on the team. Across two different coaches, while playing mostly drop coverage makes sense with Joel, to my eye, it does seem like Joel has a pretty remarkable ability to stick with smaller guys on the perimeter when he's asked to do that for a guy his size. So my question is the Sixers' lack of defensive versatility just how you're going to have to play with Joel, or do you think the team should be pushing more outside of the scheme comfort zone in preparation for the playoffs?
If that's the question, I think it should be pushing more outside of the scheme comfort zone just because you want to make sure you have those in the back pocket. So for me, we've seen Embiid come to the level in pick and roll. We've seen him trap. We've seen him play drop. I think his best coverage is start at the level and then drop back. I think he's got a really unique ability in the drop to kind of just be big and stand there and know when to recover and let his guard get back in front and when to contest. So I think it's more of a base type deal for the regular season. You would like to see what it looks like when they crank it up a little bit so that they don't have what happened against Atlanta happen again, where now they're trying to crank it up on the fly a little bit. Rotations aren't as crisp. Maybe he's not at the level as much, getting split, those type of things. Guards aren't navigating the same. Now you have to throw Ben, you don't have Ben Simmons to throw unscreen navigation anymore. So I would probably go with you would want to just see more of the other schemes. Because you know what the base is.
I'm with you. Like, I think the absence of Ben Simmons really gave them an excuse to use this season as like, hey, let's just try a bunch of different stuff this year. So in the event that we get him back or we make a trade for someone and they're incorporated into the system, now we have the base plus the other stuff. It feels like, in my viewing, and this is as someone that has not, you know, I haven't watched as many Philly games as like Philly beat people, obviously. But from the games that I've seen, like, the change has just kind of been Joel's playing a little bit higher, which is good. And Joel's been good at it. But, like, it doesn't seem like there's been a ton of experimentation beyond that. And so I do kind of wish they would tap into that a little bit more. I also understand why they haven't, where it's just like for Doc Rivers, he's probably like, okay, we're already missing like $30+ million. We need to find a way to make do in the regular season. We need to get to the postseason, period. And so, like, if our base or our base plus Joel playing a little bit higher gets us there, then let's just do that. Let's not try to get too fancy. Let's not worry about playoff counters. Let's worry about getting to the playoffs first. And so I get it, but I do kind of wonder now after this recent stretch that Philly's just firmly a playoff team right now. Now it's like, okay, what have you been building towards exactly? Like, what has this been for?
I think I understand that point. I guess part of the counter would be, again, trying to win games, trying to see what we got and use that. I think it's more, I guess, situational, in-game type adjustments. Maybe if a guy has it going, we see him ramp it up a little bit and they try and rotate. Maybe if the lineup doesn't have the same spacing. But that's a tricky balance, you know, because you're trying to win games. You know what brings you to the dance. You also need to kind of prepare. I get both sides of it. But so I'd probably like to see as the second half progresses, if they play certain guys, let's get some game plan defense in there. Let's put that in there. Let's see if we can change things that way, to your point.
Hashtag coaching is hard, I think is what we just came to with the Philly situation.
Shoot, ask Coach Michael Malone. Man's winning games saying it's not fun. It's tough, man.
To be fair, like if I had to play that bench, well, play it that way at the very least, you know. That's a
Jeff Green slander?
No, Jeff Green's playing well.
Oh.
So it's not necessarily him. It's just, I guess, virtually everyone else. Like it's, you don't know what you're getting on any given night. Jokic is going to give you a lead, and then you just have to say, like, okay, how many points are we going to lose these minutes by? If it's 5, cool. If it's more than that, we might be in trouble. But we will talk about Denver another day. This one comes from Anthony. Good day, gents. Big fan of the show and Steve's incredible and always accurate puns. Debatable. My question is in regards to the New York Knicks. What would you like to see them do at the trade deadline, and what should be their primary offseason goal?
What would I like to see them do at the trade deadline? I don't know if there's much they can do. They kind of have who they have right now, and I don't know what piece is going to elevate this group, in my opinion, this season with where they're at. So, I mean, you're going to get another point guard. You just got Cam Reddish. That room is crowded. You get another big and hope Tib trusts him enough to throw him out there. Like, I don't know. And that I will let that be your ministry. but as far as their primary offseason goal, I would say figure out your direction and stick with it. So the Knicks had Tibbs, found a group of guys that worked with Tibbs, hard-nosed, veteran team, played together, bought into the defense, found enough ways to score offensively. So you take that success, and now you add talent to it, right? Mm-hmm. Let's get Kemba. Let's get Evan Fournier. We still have enough of what we did last year, but we should have more versatility to add to it. Didn't quite pan out that way. You kind of took away from your base and didn't necessarily improve on the offensive end. So the gamble you took backfired a little bit. So now you got to lock in and say, which side are we on? Which direction are we on? Which pieces are here to really stay? Because a lot of the guys that performed well last year, some of them didn't necessarily give you the same juice this year. And so are these guys going to stay for the long haul? How do we continue to build around what Tibbs wants to do? Do we continue to build around what Tibbs wants to do? Do we try and build around Randall? Do we need more shooting? Do we need defenders back so this will work? It's a tricky dynamic. But they've got to kind of pick at least one way, one direction. Because I think playing in between to this degree doesn't serve them as much.
It's not. It has them. They are the 11th seed in the East right now. Like, they've had some injuries and they had some COVID, like many other teams in the league. But, like, it has been such a misfire this year. Like, I didn't expect them to have, like, a bottom third offense this year. Just didn't. With the talent that they added, like, I thought they would push towards average. And that just hasn't been the case. I'm with you. Like, a direction is needed. I think the biggest goal or question they have to answer, like, they just need to figure out, like, how much do we believe in Julius Randle? Like, I think that's the heart of a lot of this. Because so much of what they want to accomplish is with him in mind. They added the shooting to make life easier for him. They still want to run things through him. And defensively, like, he's not their best defender, but, like, he kind of sets that tone. And he hasn't done that this year. And then offensively, like, there's been some slipping with the jumper and stuff. And so that doesn't make it easy to run what you want to run while also trying to incorporate the other guys just because of his play style. So, like, you need to figure out, okay, can we make this work with him? And if the answer is yes, it's shaping the roster with guys that specifically fit with him. Because I do think he is a particular guy you have to build around if you're going to go that route.
I think, to your point, if you're going to keep him and build around him, he does need a certain type of roster, and he needs a certain type of guys to play with. So, like we talked about, I think we were on the same page offensively. This should help him. More space, more options. They can run more things. Don't have to lean on him as much. The issue to me feels like they're not running the same stuff for him to the same volume. So he's not in the same rhythm. And so some of the posts and drives that balanced out the shot making don't necessarily exist. And the doubles are coming, but they're not making them pay to the degree you would want to. So you're kind of stuck in between where we're still trying to run through him, but he's also pushing in a transition. He's also isoing. We're also trying to actually run offense and take advantage of our talent. So you got to find the right mix of shooting, guys who can play off ball and make plays off ball, but don't necessarily need the ball to make a play. And you just got to be able to play faster. That's the biggest thing to me. They've got to be able to play faster. I scratch my head watching the New York Knicks take 15 seconds to set up a really basic, like, rip screen to the post. Let's like, come on, like, come on.
The Knicks haven't been a fun watch for me. I'll put it that way.
Well, they haven't been a fun watch for you for 2 years.
What does that mean? No, but flow would help. And I do think that's kind of a two-way street. As far as like deadline goals, I don't know if this is a season worth saving for them. I say get what you can. Like, one, like, clear some kind of runway for Cam Reddish if you're going to invest in him. Like, that's just weird. That's number one for the deadline. I can't remember who had the report out that some, I think it was Brian Windhorst that said that, like, Kemba, Alec Burks, some of those guys are available for the right price. Like, if you're going to trade a first-round pick for Cam Reddish, it probably would behoove you to have a ready-made rotation spot for him. Like, empower him. And this is the question that, this is what we talked about on the pod when the trade happened, where it's like, okay, Cam wanted out of Atlanta because he wants a larger role, and now you're going to Atlanta and you're like 11th on the depth chart.
Now, I will counter with, he's only been there for, what, 2 games, right?
And yeah, but
Tibbs ain't the most plug-and-play type guy.
Now, we're getting somewhere.
No, I'm saying, I if he's not playing after a week, let's chat. And just got there. And also, Quentin, I mean, I don't know.
Quentin Grimes is playing well.
Quentin Grimes is playing well, and that's the tough part. Which one of these guys do you take out? So to your point, it's too crowded. So if Tibbs is starting Fournier, right, got to start Barrett. You got IQ that's got to play. Alec Burks continues to play despite .. And then you have Grimes playing well. Feels like that's the in-between. So I think hopefully he'll get some time here shortly. If not, it'll be interesting. And also that'll make it interesting because generally if the front office trades for a guy, they kind of want him in. And then if he doesn't play, it becomes a thing. And then it'll be Tom Thibodeau. Oh, we don't want that.
So we are essentially following the Tom Thibodeau script right now for another team? Is that what we're getting at?
Oh, I'm not putting my name on that one.
All right, fair enough. Let's put your name on this one. Quick one from Trey. So how many legit NBA rotation guys do you think the Thunder have?
The who?
Oh, brother.
Legit NBA rotation guys.
I am very interested in your answer.
Right now or potentially?
However you want to take it, friend.
Oh, okay. I see the setup. You're trying to get OKC mad at me.
You do that all on your own. I did not have to set you up.
Shea.
Mm-hmm.
Giddey.
Okay.
Lou Dort.
Mm-hmm.
JRE.
Okay.
Darius Bazley.
Okay.
There's got to be someone else here.
I am buzzing. I can't believe it.
Not Poku Midsky.
You're going to jail.
Not Midadi Diakite. Aaron Wiggins could be if he lands in the right spot and gets time, but I'm not going to put it on the list. Mike Mitzgala. He's a rotation player. Did I say him already?
No, you haven't.
Oh, Mike Muscala for sure. Let me see. Depends on the team.
Oh, my goodness. So
if you need size, Kenrich Williams, I guess.
You six, guess.
6.5.
6.5. You are a bad person. I hope you know this. This is it.
No, Kenrich Williams is a perfectly acceptable basketball player. I just don't.
You just don't what?
Not all the way there right now. Maybe he needs a different scenario. Maybe he needs a different situation. I'd like to see him play more. I feel like he should be playing more than 20 minutes a game. I really liked him in New Orleans, which is the funny part.
And now you don't like him despite him still playing well. And
I do like him. Y'all just love him. So it's more fun this way.
I once again ask you to define fun. But Oh, goodness. I really thought you were about to leave Mike Muscala off. I was like, what is the beef here? I get teasing me about Kenrich Williams, but I didn't get the Muscala thing.
I guess defense. I feel
he's
like
fine.
He's not bad, but I feel like Mike Muscala, maybe it's just me. I feel like Mike Muscala on a good team looks different than Mike Muscala on an okay team. Because you just need him to do different things. So maybe that's my personal hangup. So I'll apologize to that man. I'm sorry, Mike Muscala.
Personal apology to Mike Muscala.
Yeah, yeah. Him, Lauri Markkanen. Who else I got to apologize to?
Kenrich Williams.
I'm sorry, Kenrich.
That was very convincing. But I guess while we're still here, like, where are you at on Derek Favors at this point? Is he just done?
In Oklahoma City, should be. I think he can still give you second quarter minutes for a decent team.
Would you rather have him or Ed Davis?
I'd rather have Ed, personally.
Yeah.
Give me Ed Davis all day.
Okay.
Would you rather have Derek Favors or Tristan Thompson?
Yuck. Oh, goodness. I probably trust Favors more.
Wow. Would you rather have Mason Plumlee or Tristan Thompson?
I will take Mason Plumlee.
Okay. Robin Lopez or Tristan Thompson?
Give me the sweeping hooks of Robin Lopez.
Taj Gibson or Tristan Thompson?
Probably taking Taj.
DeMarcus Cousins or Tristan Thompson?
Now we've gotten to the ugly part. Okay. Jeez.
I was gonna find one, folks.
Yeah, this is probably the one. Probably Tristan. I mean, he can still move a little bit, at the very least.
Wow. All right, man. What's the next question?
There has to be some sort of differentiator. All right. Fine. Okay. This one comes from Hey Them. Says my question is related to the evaluation of players in today's NBA. How come when we discuss players and evaluate them and what they provide to a team, we hardly consider the defensive end? Even when the defensive end of the floor is considered, it hardly carries the same weight as the offensive end. I would argue that it is more common to find a player in the NBA that can score naturally than defend naturally. Shouldn't we value elite defense higher than elite offense since it is harder to come by?
Great question. Nakai, you got to help me out. Who is this we he's speaking of?
You see, here, the dunker spot, we, analysis at large.
All right. Would be kind of the thing. Smug answer out the way, because most people don't know what they're looking for or looking at when it comes to defense. So they would rather evaluate on things they could talk about than things they can't.
Mm-hmm.
But that now that's out the way. I do like this question. So he's saying he thinks it's more common to find a player that can score naturally than defend naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think elite defense is valued. I think it is value. I mean, 3-and-D guys literally earn that nickname because of their contributions on the defensive end. The three-pointer is usually like the bonus. It's the fact that they can do both that helps them. I think that the issue is in today's NBA, you have to be really, really good defensively. And up until this year, after the change with the physicality, it was really hard to fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
As just that defensive person, which I think more guys are stepping into this year. But I think most teams want to have that wing defender. If we talk about most of the teams we're talking about having issues, it's what, Utah, Dallas, everyone's saying they're a wing defender away. Everyone's saying Lakers need a wing defender. So it's valued. I just don't think it's seen as easily or understood as easily. And I think there are some times where that elite defensive player can hurt you on the other end. So if you look at Boston, you got to play Marcus Smart. You got no choice but to play Marcus Smart. His defense is at that level. But now you have to figure out, where do I put him on the other end? I mean, heck, Ben Simmons spent 2.5 years at the dunker spot.
I mean, now we do it.
Yeah, nice. Well, that's a good shot. I mean, hell, they were putting Tony Allen all over the place in Memphis, trying to find a way to not have defenses just help off of him. So you need to be really, really good at that defensive position, night in, night out, guard multiple positions. Like, you have to have branches off to me as a defender to be valued at the same level as someone who can shoot it. But I think you get more opportunity if you have defense that brings you to the dance. And now we can mold the rest, right? You look at a Herb Jones. Defense brought him to the dance. And now we're seeing some of the other stuff. If you're, quote unquote, a shooter, and you're not making shots, that's the end of the run for you. that's your opportunity. But if you have the defense, heck, I got to play him. Energy, juice, and screen navigation, all that good stuff. So I think it's valued highly. I just don't think it's valued by certain folk.
I feel that. And like, to that point, I would say look deeper in terms of the positions, right? I think even then, like, elite defense is value, it might be more valuable than elite offense for a center, for an example. Like at large, like, you would value what type of rim protection that big man brings more so than anything else. But like, Kevon Looney starts in Golden State. And like, that's a very basic example. But like, his value is almost completely derived offensively from the way that he screens. And like, almost exclusively screens for other people to get them open, more so than like him being a pick and roll threat, if that makes sense. What puts him on the floor is what he's able to do defensively. What he's able to do and drop, play him at the level, can switch him some, can trap him some. And so, like, I think there you can kind of see, if you're solid here, we can figure, to your point, like Herb Jones, like, brings you to the dance, we can figure out something else. I think it's, for the perimeter guys, it's different. Because if you are just a non-threat with the ball or a non-shooter, like, teams get so much more aggressive with the way that they help off of you. And that's extra harmful in a postseason setting. And so I think that's where coaches are probably like, okay, if you're this destructive to our offense, and like, half court offense in the playoffs is already very difficult, I'd much rather have the threat. And then whatever the scheme is, we're going to insulate you, or we're just going to send you a bunch of help. Like, we talked about Chicago a bunch this year, where DeMar DeRozan has not been a good defender throughout his career. But like, in their scheme, his job is, okay, pre-rotate early and close out. That's what you got to do. And if you can execute that, the rest of the scheme will do the work for you. And then we know what he brings offensively. And so I think coaches will probably rather, in a playoff setting anyway, rather deal with that, execute this simple job, or if you're switched into a mismatch, we're going to scram you out so you don't have to worry about it, versus the Tony Allen problem, where it's legit 4-on-5 offensively at times. And it just makes it so much more difficult to execute.
And it also depends on your lineup structure, for being honest. So if even to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, like we talked about earlier in the season, their lineups at first had the defenders, but they had too many of them. Mm-hmm. And once they got that blend of, okay, we have our defender we want on the court with these other guys, maybe we could sneak another one in here because we have three other guys spaced, it kind of just changes the math a little bit. Thought you brought up a good point with the big men, though. Now, I feel like that's a position where we definitely value defense higher, right? Unless you can just really, no, you got to be able to defend. There's a whole role for that. You could just protect the rim and roll.
I was about to say, we've been, even to that point, on the high end of the center scale, like, how many pods have we done talking about how disrespecting Nikola Jokic is?
As a defender?
Like, or just in general. Yeah, but like, in general, but like, because of the defense, where it's just like, okay, hey, Jokic is a top five player because XYZ, and it's also like, well, he can't play defense, so who cares? which is erroneous, but like it kind of goes to the point of where like how highly defense is valued for big men. And so like if an MVP candidate like that can just be dismissed because of the conception that you can't, the misconception that you can't play defense, then obviously lower level players are going to get that too.
Yeah. And again, I think it's just easier to see offense. It's a lot easier to see what Cade does with straight line drives than his improved weak side help and rotations.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's a good discussion on defense. I like it. Honestly, probably one of my favorite parts of the podcast that we can just kind of dig deep on defense in a way that our listeners appreciate. So thank you for the questions. This one's going to come from Dylan. Says, which direction should the Spurs take at the trade deadline? Is it better to move off some of the veterans? He mentions Derek White, Thad Young, Doug McDermott, and stockpile assets or young talent, or should they try to lean in and fight for the postseason?
I would say try and do both. Make the right deals to open up some minutes for some guys that you might have, like when they moved Bryn Forbes. Hey, that opens up some opportunity for some of these other guys. If you're not going to play Thad, you might as well just move him at this point.
Yeah, that's probably the one.
And how do you feel about the McDermott fit in San Antonio? Because I had expectations, and I feel like he's almost at the point where he doesn't necessarily fit what this team is looking for. Not that he can't play, but those could be Devin Vassell minutes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, he fills a very specific role as, like, their movement shooter and as their DHO guy to give him a little bit of versatility in the half court. But, like, they also just have so many guards and wings that they kind of need to see what they have. And I like this question because, like, San Antonio, I think, is they're outside of the play-in right now. They are 12 right now. And so, zooming out, my answer would just be, yeah, sell the vets, play the young guys. Whatever happens from there, happens from there. But, like, I don't even know if this is the year for them to, like, bottom out. Because I don't really see, again, to be clear, like, I'm not a draft Nick. So that's not the hat I'm trying to put on. But, like, from what I've seen and what I've read and what I've listened to from people that are smarter than me about draft stuff, like, this also doesn't seem like there is no Cade in this draft. There is no Mobley. There is no Barnes. There are no Suggs in, not Suggs, but there's no Green, no Suggs in this draft coming up. So, like, even with that, I'm not sure if, you know, completely selling off the vets and whatever makes sense for this year, if that makes sense. Like, I think I agree if you're not going to play Thad, trade him. McDermott still has a role for you. Like, I would almost rather them kind of play for the play-in since so much of their core right now is 25 and under anyway.
Oh, no, I want them to compete for the play-in as well. And McDermott does fill a role, but also, I mean, it's weird. He's shooting 40% from three, but then there's nights where he doesn't play more than 25 minutes. And so it's like, which way are we going with it? Is he a key piece of what you're doing, or you just need a shooter and he happens to be the guy? So that's where my theory would be, if you can get the right piece or the right move, and now you can compete with the play-in with the pieces that you need to evaluate for next year. W.
Got you. Let's go to a quick one from Andrew. Since the Minnesota Timberwolves are actually playing a basketball game right now, what is Jalen Noel's ceiling based on his play this month? Do you think he has sixth man of the year potential?
Like ever?
Yeah, I'd say ever. What's his ceiling?
I have liked the aggression offensively, but it often feels like it's a lot of aggression offensively. So I'm not sure how to take it. Like, is this something that is purely because of the unit he's playing with? Is he just naturally an aggressive player? Is this usage based on how Finch believes in him? Does what he is doing right now translate to another team? I just have questions. But he's going to get after it. He's going to go for it. Does he give you Clarkson vibes yet?
Oh, God, I don't like that question. Doesn't quite give me Clarkson vibes. First, quick shout out to Mark Schindler, who wrote a great piece on Jalen Noel not too long ago. Want to give him the quick plug.
Are these people paying you?
No, like I...
technically they are.
I mean, yes, but like he's not. But, you know, he wrote a good piece on what shot him out. That's all. But beyond that, like, I can see a world in which he's just a. I can see a world where he's like a 13-3-3 guy off the bench for a good team. So, like, if that's the bar, like, sure, he can win one. Like, I don't know if I project that yet. I do like what he brings offensively. Like, I do like the verb that he drives with. I would like to feel a little bit better about the shot, but, like, he's not a bad shooter at all. Like, this recent stretch for him, I mean, basically just January for him has been good for him. I don't think you can take him out of the rotation at this point. Yeah, like, if he's on a team that gives him the volume, like, I think he put up points. Like, he's very much a bucket.
He's not shy. I'll tell you that much. He is not shy. And that's going to bring you to the dance. Do you... Malik Monk vibes? As far as scoring ceiling goes? Just kind of filling that role? Where I just spontaneously combust for buckets every now and then. It's okay. I can take an L on that one. I'm throwing stuff like, out here.
No, I feel like I could see. I'm trying to think of who he actually does remind me of.
He's totally a mindset guy. While you think about it, he's a mindset guy for me because he's going to go for it and you just got to live with the results. And I kind of like that they're letting him do that instead of trying to keep him in a box. But boy, it's a lot of dribbling sometimes. I'm sorry.
I mean, you're not wrong. So I understand why you started off with Clarkson. That's a good shot.
Unlike many of the ones that Clarkson takes, but it's fine.
I could see some elite, like the jumper is a little bit better. I could see some elite Monk.
Okay.
We can rock with that. There we go. We had Jalen Noel talk on the podcast. I'm very proud. This one comes from Joseph, who asks, is this Hawks 5-game win streak a function of addition by subtraction with the Reddish trade, or is the team finally healthy and clicking?
I have it as a combination of them getting healthy and just having clearer lineups. Knowing who's going to play, you know what your opportunity is, you know what your role is. That just makes it a lot easier to do what you're asked to do. Not as much pressure. Coaching-wise, you're not trying to weigh as many things. Like, okay, we need this. Let me give this guy a shot. Who do I go here? And they're actually attempting to try to play defense, and Trae Young has lost his mind.
You know, it's very helpful that the defensive effort is ramped up because it has not been good for most of the year, to be kind. I think it all kind of blends into each other, right? The lineups are cleaner because they were able to get Cam out of there in a way. Man, this trade is just so weird. It's obviously early, but it's just like Cam's not playing and Kevin Knox is bad.
So you've given this a thumbs down to both teams somehow. It 4 days in.
Look, man, it was weird when it happened. And I haven't seen anything to make me think it's less weird yet. I think that's probably the objective way to go about it. I would like less weirdness. But no, like, I think it's more so about the Hawks getting healthy. Like, I think their game this week, I think it was it Brad that tweeted that? But like, they finally had a game in which they just didn't, they had a clean injury report for the first time all year in late January. That is insane to me. But also, they had already won a few games in a row before that. So, like, to that point, again, it's more about what they've already had and just playing better. Trey's been losing his mind pretty much since the first month of the year. A little bit of an adjustment period to start. The floaters weren't falling, jumper wasn't falling, and now they all are. And he's just taking it up a level. The pull-up shooting is much better. Trey deserves more credit for what he's done this year.
He was voted an all-star starter.
I mean, yeah. A little bit more. But no, like I'm glad that defense amped up. Again, I've loved what Onyeka Okongwu's been able to bring defensively, what DeAndre Hunter's been able to bring defensively. Clint's looking solid again. Like, if they defend, like the offense has been good all year. Like, they've been scoring.
How much of it is also the Herder Hunter in the starting lineup?
I think that helps.
I like that combination. I don't know why. It just feels like everyone kind of knows what they're supposed to do and they just do it.
You have
Who's your X factor for them?
Honestly, like I don't know how controversial it is. Like X factor kind of feels like Clint at this point. Cause I think you can just kind of pinpoint how well or poorly the Hawks have played based on like if he's been available and if he's looked like himself or not.
So you're saying a return to form defensively for Clint raises his team ceiling?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, he was in the running for like an all defensive team last year. Like, that's how good he was. Okay. That's fine. We can disagree. That's cool. But no, that's how good he was to me. I guess I should throw that in there. And he just hasn't been that for most of the year.
I have Bogdan Bogdanovic.
That's a good one.
And especially if he's going to be off the bench. Gotta hit some of these shots. Gotta score a little bit. You score and you start making the plays, that second unit looks different.
Like him being uneven this year, and again, a lot of that's been with him being hurt as well. But him not being who he was last year is why Kevin Herter's emergence has been so huge for Atlanta, especially recently. Because like he's kind of feeling that can shoot the skin off the ball, can secondary play make, keep the chain moving. If Trey's off the floor, he can run a little bit of the offense. Like he's filled that gap for Atlanta. So yeah, Bogdan can get back to playing well. Like that really takes Atlanta up another level. 5-game win streak isn't anything to sneeze at, I would say. Like I think they do have a run in them if they can stay healthy.
Would you say they're your wild card in the Eastern Conference?
This is good podcasting. I'd say so. Cause like they could kind of bust up some of this. If they can get to, like, I wouldn't want to see them in a play-in at all.
I mean, they showed last year. I don't know if you really want to see them in the playoffs.
Yep.
So if I'm, let's say, Chicago, that's not the most fun thing I want to deal with is Trae Young and pick and roll with Vooch. All due respect to Vooch, he's been great. But now you really got to find a coverage for him. Mm-hmm. And we saw what Trae Young did to help defense, pick and roll coverages, attacking your wings if you switch. That would be a dicey scenario. Like I don't know if Brooklyn really wants to see them that early. I don't think anyone really wants to see them that early, except maybe Miami, but that's just Miami.
And even then, like, the Hawks just beat them.
This is true.
So
I know Philly doesn't want to see them again.
I think they're good.
So you got the Hawks taking over the Wizards.
Oh Whoa.
This is a quick victory lap. Give it to him.
I don't need to see anything else from the after the you blow a 35-point lead. I don't want to hear anything else.
It's a tough deal. I'm not going to talk about the thing. I am going to talk about giving up a deep, deep three, almost getting a 5-second violation trying to inbound the ball, calling your last timeout, and then committing a 5-second violation. That part goes underrated. But let's keep it moving. Let them nope. Bradley heal.
Okay. No more Wizard takes, huh? I see. This one comes from Lucas, who is sending the question from France. We are international here to Dunker Spot. Very cool. What would be your best non-starters lineup so far this year?
Ah, merci beaucoup, mon ami. I'm rusty, bro. I'm rusty. Non-starters, like bench players?
Yes.
Oh. Kevin Love?
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Hero still count?
Yeah.
Kelly Oubre?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I get tripped up on who's starting and who's not. Who else you got? I got to find five people, right?
Yes.
Montrezl Harrell.
Okay.
Jordan Clarkson. Dennis Schroeder.
This is somehow getting worse.
That was a joke.
So Clarkson wasn't?
No, man. What happened between you and Jordan Clarkson?
I gotta know.
What happened?
I'm sure he's a fine person. Like, I have no personal beef with him. It's just
the basketball portion, though. This is a lot of Jordan Clarkson slander over a year span. We've only had this pod for a year.
I don't even know if it's slander. He's just not a good defender, and like the decision making leaves a lot to be desired. You know, he runs very hot and cold. That's all it is.
Is it him or his archetype? High volume shooter, streaky, defense is effort based, but not necessarily solid, and could make plays, but probably won't. Is it just that?
I mean, I don't like that archetype.
Do you understand their value, though? Do you appreciate?
I get it when it works.
Get hot. So this is a good results, bad process type deal?
Yes.
Don't you play like him in 2K?
No.
Oh, no. I'm pulling up the clip. No, it's not. No.
You're going to pull up a singular highlight clip in a game that we were at like 40?
Yes, just one. That's all I do. It's 2022. You don't even need to be right most of the time.
You know what? Oh, man. There are some shots that we fired there. That's cool. As far as the all bench lineup this year, I was kind of torn between who are the five best bench players versus, okay, what's the best, what is the best lineup I can make out of five bench players? Like, I didn't know which one I wanted to go with that.
You built an actual bench lineup. Okay, go ahead. I'm going to try and remix mine.
Okay. Well, if we're doing that, like, I'd have Gary Payton second at point. I'd have Tyler Hero. I would go Oubre, Love, and I think Washington would be out round out the front court.
Trying to figure out how I remixed this. I don't think I remixed it well. Does Bobby Portis count?
No, he's been starting since. No. We can't include Bobby Portis in this one.
I can't use Anthony Simons anymore, can I, right?
That feels on the edge, I'll be honest.
All right. Well, let's do a Chicago Bulls impersonation and hope my scheme works.
Okay.
Caruso, Hero, Oubre, Melo, Kevin Love.
I see. You will not quit Melo. This is beautiful. But all right, let's let's close it out here. This one's going to come from Connor, who says he's a big fan of the pod. My question is, which duos would you rather have for the next 5 years and rank them in order? He has Darius Garland and Evan Mobley, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., the Jays in Boston, Fred Van Vliet and Scotty Barnes, LaMelo Ball and Miles Bridges, and then Cam Thomas and Dayron Sharp.
Did Connor write this question or did you?
I typed in his question into the Google Doc for the show.
All right. So Thomas and Dayron, you guys are last.
Tough.
All due respect. Great potential. But you guys are last. And now this is where it gets tricky. I always love a great power ranking where number five makes it tough.
Mm-hmm.
So over the next 5 years, I'm going to have to go with Fred Van Vliet and Scotty Barnes at five.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Tatum and Brown at four. Hmm. I'm going to go with LaMelo and Bridges at 3.
Okay.
That was a tough one for me. I'm going to go with... Oh, this is tough. This is difficult. This is very, very tricky. I'm going to go with Garland and Mobley at 2 and Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr. at number 1.
Okay. Respectable, respectable. Let's see where you're coming from.
I will go... I'm going to go Mobley and Garland 1. And then it gets tricky for me.
Oh boy. Oh, this is, I feel it coming. This is a moment in the dunker spot where some fire's coming.
Is it fire coming? Like the next 5 years, 5 years portion is interesting to me. Cause that puts, man, the Jays are smack dab in their prime at that point. Fred VanVleet's out of his prime, but Scottie Barnes is entering, and there's no telling what he looks like in 5 years. Miles Bridges is my most improved guy. LaMelo's really good. Like, the only two that I were really firm on heading into this was, like, Garland and Mobley at 1, because I think Garland's already all-star good, and Mobley's just going to destroy worlds. And then 6, I had Cam and Dayron, because I'm still not exactly sure what Dayron's going to be on offense yet. I know what he can do. I just don't know if he's going to be utilized in a way that exemplifies those skills.
That's the end of the floor you worried about?
But that is one of the ends on the floor that I'm worried about, you know.
Oh, but, man, if he could play defense, I'd be very intrigued.
Uh-huh. You know, he's a big, he's learning. He's going to be all right. But anyway. I do have the Cleveland duo 1, and I have the Brooklyn duo at 6.
Oh, well, we got 4 others to put in that sandwich there, pal.
Yeah, that's also true. I'll go Ja and Jaren. I will go with the Jays. I'll go, honestly, you know what? I think it's in order.
Oh, the buildup for the in order?
Like, LaMelo and Bridges versus VanVleet and Barnes is kind of where I'm torn here.
Really? Freddie and Scotty at that? I mean, LaMelo will have made a leap. Miles Bridges is clearly at least shown he can do this.
Yeah. So, you know, I might flip those two then. So I'll go the Cleveland duo, the Memphis duo, the Boston duo, Charlotte duo, Toronto duo, and then Brooklyn duo.
I had a tough time ranking the Boston duo because I don't know if they'll still be a duo in 5 years.
That's a good point.
I went Ja because I feel like he could still do more.
And just terrifying to think about.
Jaren Jackson Jr.'s defense this season has kind of flown under the radar. So he's no Mobley, but you combine the kind of aspects offensively as well. And if he gets more reps and time at the 5.
He's intriguing.
I mean, yeah. But that Cleveland duo is scary. Either way.
Yeah, I got it. You know, I have a question for you before we close this out. And this is something that I've asked you before, but like, okay, where are you at on Rookie of the Year at this point?
Like who it is?
Yeah. Because this recent Cade stretch is just insane.
Cade is coming. I still have Mobley, but Cade is coming. So I'd probably go Mobley 1, Cade 2. Now, 3 is where it gets interesting. Scotty's hanging on, but those two can flip at any moment.
Scotty and Franz. Yeah.
It's tough not to have Franz in the top 3, but Cade, nah. when you watch Cade, folks, watch the straight line drives. You can talk about the burst all you want, but once he gets by you, he's by you.
Mm-hmm.
Foot is right next to your shoulder, and your shoulder, it's over. Where are you at with MVP since we're here? Because I have made some shifts.
Oh?
Yeah, so I have my core four all year. Giannis, KD, Steph, and Jokic. KD has fallen out of my top five just by default.
Mm-hmm.
Embiid is my number two right now.
Who do you have one?
I still have Giannis.
Okay. Oh, so you have Embiid over Jokic right now?
Yes.
Okay.
I have Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, LeBron James, and Steph Curry.
Hmm. Okay.
It's my five right now.
That's your five right now.
With the only other names as KD, DeMar, and Ja for me. Sorry, Phoenix.
I see. So I guess my question becomes, what, it's going to sound wild to say out loud, but why LeBron over Ja?
Ja's in my conversation. And Ja could definitely easily slide into... It's a rotating wheel once you get past.
Yeah, like this is a deep class. Like I'm not trying to say like you're making a hot take or anything like
that. Nah, it's more of a salute for the stretch LeBron's had. Like I know the Lakers haven't really been winning, but for him to kind of do that with this team at that age, I'm going to give him a nod right now. Ja's been incredible. DeMar's been incredible. LeBron's been incredible. Having to pick between one of those three to give some sort of love to, plus now having to face a Joel Embiid Jokic debate. I don't like it, man. That's my least favorite basketball debate right now. Like, I'll take pure Hooper versus what's the other category?
Oh, God. Pure Hooper versus basketball player, I think is what it is.
Yeah, I'll take an analytics debate at this point for Embiid and Jokic. They're both so good, but they're both so good at different things. And so when you try and compare them, you really can't. Anyways.
Like I still have Giannis one. I think I do have Embiid's probably in my top three at this point. Like I think my three would be Giannis, Jokic, Embiid. And then four and five is kind of I'm with you. It's kind of a rotating wheel for me right now.
Have you officially dropped redacted from your five?
Who's redacted in this case?
He's playing right now.
No, I don't think he's out of my five, but like, I think there's a clear three at this point.
Okay, that's fair. Is there any coincidence that you spoke glowingly about the Miami Heat and your great podcast appearance with KOC and Kendrick Perkins also spoke glowingly about the Miami Heat, but also said Tyler Hero should get an all-star berth?
Now you see the difference. To answer your question, like, yes, that is very much a coincidence.
Okay.
I just talked about the Heat on the defense episode. Like, it's not like I haven't been, and I also, it's funny, like, I talked about the Heat on the defense episode. When we did the awards thing, I gave the Spo's Coach of the Year. Like, this is all stuff that's been said on the dunker spot, you know? This is, you know, the receipts are here. For better or for worse, the receipts are here.
Ooh, the receipts are here. Okay, Nakai's getting spicy in 2022.
Don't do this.
Golly, he's coming out here doing a 50-piece wing dinner, Cajun rub,
lemon pepper. Here we go.
Wet.
You couldn't even keep that together.
Carry on.
You got it. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, MVP's fun. And like, as I have my clear three, this would also be like, now we're going to get like a three week stretch where Steph shoots like 54% from three. And he's like, oh, cool. Right. He's really good. Who would have thunk it?
Can you believe the Grizz are the three seed? Like, what's wilder, Memphis being the three seed or Cleveland being the three seed?
I think it's still Cleveland.
Yeah. They're really fun. They're a very fun team to watch. And side note, Giannis is, I think, the most relatable superstar of all time.
Just eating wings, you know?
Man, they took an L, came in, got the wings, eating. Yeah, we sucked.
Who among us gets comfort food after taking an L?
I love that guy, man.
All right. Superstars are just like us.
I don't have a landing spot this week. I'm tired.
I, too, am tired, man. Busy week in terms of content, late flight, well, delayed flight, I should say. Flight straight to the hotel, straight to hooking the laptop up to do the podcast. This has been a fun stretch.
Hey, I appreciate you making that time out of your schedule. I know you had a packed, busy day, busy week, booked and busy, flights, PJs.
Okay. No, all right. You got it.
No appearances? My bad.
No appearances, no PJs, man. I'm just riding and podding.
Oh, no pajamas? All right.
Okay. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your pods. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Evan Mobley.